You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jones. Bowden.
He's got it.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Now look back at the third day's play from the Gabba, and an uplifting day for England after that tremendous fight back by Joe Root and David Milan gives England just a little sniff of, well, maybe even victory. But I think we're thinking too far ahead, Simon, aren't we?
Well, I think we are, Yoz. Only one team in the history of Test cricket has won after being 278 or more runs behind on first inning. So there's just a little bit of context for you. But a review of the day, a very quick review of the day. Australia all out for 425. They added 82 runs for their last three wickets, so they had a bit of fun. Travis Head, last man out, looking to increase the scoring rate, giving himself some room. Bowled by Wood for a magnificent 152. Stark played his part as well with 35. So three for Wood overall, three for 85. And then when England started, Rory Burns giving out LBW for naught, reviewed it, so he didn't get a pair. He reviewed it successfully. Ball was going over the top, but he was out for 13, gloving through off Cummins. Hamid gloving down the leg side off Stark for 27. Played well, Hamid. Innings snuffed out at 61. Then an incredible partnership, magnificent partnership between Milan and Root, worth 159. And they are still together at the close to give England some hope. How much hope? Well, remains to be seen. And that's why we play the game, to find out. And it's a tantalising prospect on the fourth day and possibly fifth day of the game.
Yeah, fantastic. And well played, England. Milan's a very reassuring presence, isn't he, coming into bat, actually. He's a calm guy. I think that's really helped England's cause. It defied our predictions slightly, didn't it? I mean, you know, if you look back at what we thought would happen, we both went for kind of England 7 down at the end of the day. You had 200 for 7, I had 240 for 7. We weren't far off with the runs, but we were way off with the wickets.
Yeah, we were bang in the middle in terms of runs. We were actually sort of quite accurate. And I thought Australia would bat on and score some runs, which would limit the number of runs England would respond with. You went 240, I actually went 201. So I was fractionally closer, one run closer. So it's a sort of technical win for me. But I don't think we can claim victory, really, because we both said 7 down and it's only 2 down. So I think that's another day, another draw, actually. So we're level after 2 days of predictions. And later on, we'll predict what we think it's going to happen on the fourth day of the match. We'll give you our score prediction at the close of play and see if we can get any closer and see if one of us can actually nudge in front in this first test match. Who is going to nudge in front in this first test match? Well, Australia clearly strong favourites, aren't they? I mean, England's still 58 runs behind. There's a new ball around the corner. That's only 10 overs away. And the new ball, so important in the morning, you feel. It is, isn't it, often in Australia, that Kookaburra ball. It's normally worth a wicket or two.
Yeah, and that was the key, I think, for England today, was they only lost one wicket to the new ball, didn't they? They lost Rory Burns, who got an absolute snorter from Pat Cummins, couldn't really do anything about it. But Hamid stood firm, and they didn't lose their second wicket until the 20th over. And I think that's the sort of key area. If you can survive those first 15 overs with only, say, one wicket lost, that does give the middle order much more opportunity. Just before we go on to the England innings, I mean, just a little reflection on that Australian performance. And the star of the day, well, the star of the whole match, really, so far, Travis Head. And, you know, we talk about predictions and expecting people to do well and so on. Maybe we should have got a little hint of how Travis Head was going to go by an innings he played for South Australia against Queensland. It was a 50-over match in sort of October time. And he got 230 of 127 balls with 28 fours and 8 sixes, a strike rate of 181 in a 50-over game. I mean, remarkable performance, that. And, you know, that just sort of put down a marker for, I think, you know, how he was going to play. So we were all kind of saying, well, probably Usman Khawaja would get the number five spot, and Travis Head looks a bit of an iffy player, struggled for Sussex last year. And, wow, he's come over and come in and really absolutely asserted himself massively and basically given Australia a fantastic chance of victory.
Yeah, devastating innings from Travis Head. He's also in good form in the Sheffield Shield as well. Mm. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday. You know, the fact that England underprepared, some of the Australians underprepared. The players have been playing in the T20 World Cup, you know, little red ball cricket. But Travis Head played 5 Shield matches and scored, you know, well over 300 runs. So, you know, he was in decent form. He averaging 49. So you can understand why they went with Travis Head ahead of Usman Khawaja for this test match. And you're right, lots and lots of runs. I mean, he's absolutely, you know, run glut so far in this Australian summer. I say summer, I mean, the weather has been, you know, generally speaking, pretty ordinary around the country. Lots of rain around. But, you know, he's benefited. And today he sort of took that on and gave Australia that lead, 278. I mean, in a way, he didn't really have to give it away, but he was sort of playing a shot of ball towards the end. You know, Australia really could have nailed England. And you know, Stark was caught out of deep mid-wicket. I mean, England did not look like taking a wicket in that sort of opening phase of the game. And in a way, Stark tossed it away. And they could have really got, you know, gone massive. You don't, you know, and you wonder how significant that's going to be in the final analysis. Possibly not. It probably won't be. That's my hunch. But, you know, you never know. You know, when you're in a position in Australia, you just have to be a strong position. You have to be as absolutely ruthless as possible. You give the opposition nothing because, you know, the pitch can flatten out. And this Brisbane pitch has flattened out. We saw India chase 320 to win in the final innings of the Gabba Test match in January. So, you know, there is that sort of optimism for England. The pitch did look relatively benign today. Although, as you say, you know, Cummings bowled that snorter to Burns that took off. It was a strange shot he was trying to play. It was quite close to him, and he was looking to run it down to third, I think. And Cummings found the glove, and also Stark found the glove against Hamid as well down the leg side. That was, you know, it was always a bit of a strangle. England did look a bit tired today. They looked a bit toothless. And Australia, you know, rather frittered their wickets away in a way. Although, you know, I mean, Lyon played a big shot as well against Mark Wood, short ball. But, you know, Wood was still running in. It was great to see him, actually. Lots of energy, still running in. Banged it in short and Lyon top edge one over the keeper. And then next ball, he sort of spooned it up to Robinson on the onside. And then Head sort of gave himself some room, a bit like the last over of a one-day match, actually, and was bowled by a Yorker. So, in a way, England benefited from Australia, you know, sort of over-exuberance. But, you know, they still, it was still party time in a way. 82 runs for the last 3 wickets is, you know, is fair enough, isn't it? I mean, that, and, you know, you expect to win. You expect to win most cricket matches with time left and a lead of 278 on first innings.
So a great credit to England, actually, that they managed to fight not only through the day, but, you know, to start with through that really awkward session before lunch. Rory Burns getting, as you say, a reprieve, reviewing that LBW decision. One little thing I thought was impressive, actually, even before that, was the fact that Hazib Hamid elected to take first ball. Well, I don't know how the decision came, but Rory Burns normally takes first ball. Obviously, being out first ball in the first innings, you don't really want to face the first ball in the second innings, maybe. And whoever decided on that, Hamid took first ball. And that, I think that just sort of... talking to Kumar Sangakkara once about batting, and he said, you know, if you can get off strike early on and just be at the non-striker's end, or even come in at the beginning of an over so you're not facing initially, and just get the atmosphere and get the light and get the sort of sense of the pitch and the bowlers and so on. If you can have a few balls, a few sighters, it just helps settle the nerves a little. And so I think that was a good thing that England did. And Burns, after surviving that first awkward delivery and the one that, you know, was an LBW decision given, he reviewed it and given not out, he looked a bit better. But still, I don't know, you just wonder with that method. You know, he's been out for 6 ducks this year. He is a bad starter, undoubtedly.
Yeah, it was the third time in 55 test innings that he's not taken the first ball. So he normally does. And the other 2 occasions was when he had a night watchman at the other end you know, when you go out to bat late in the day or whatever it is. And so he, you know, in that situation, of course, you stand at the non-striker's end and let the night watchman, you know, take, you know, face the music at the other end. So, you know, it was a big departure for Burns. You know, he likes to take the first ball. And, you know, there was a big build-up as well. You know, we were excited. You know, it's one of those sort of dramatic moments in a test match. You know, a player bowled first ball, you know, the Ashes. What's going to happen in the second innings? The crowd were on it as well. And then suddenly you saw, oh, Hamid's going to take the first ball. But, you know, it only delayed the inevitable for a few balls. And eventually Burns, you know, did get on strike and was able to tuck his first run in the Ashes away on the onside. He did play a couple of pull shots as well. He hit one really sweet boundary through the leg side on the pull, but then and had the review as well. It's very hard to get an LBW at the Gabba because of the bounce. So unless it's really full, almost like Yorker length, you think there's a good chance the ball is going over the top. And you know, they did talk about it. I mean, Burns, his initial reaction was, oh, no, you give me... And then he thought, hold on a second, this is the Gabba. There must be a chance he's going over the top. And it was reviewed and, you know, it was overturned, but it didn't last, you know, significantly long time. He was out in the ninth over. Hamid was impressive. You know, he really dug in. He, you know, technically good. You know, he looked to be reasonably busy and had played one or two nice shots. He was actually starting to play really nicely. He had a lovely sort of back cut for four. And then, you know, I mean, you bowlers might say, oh, we bowl for those down the leg side. You know, little glove through to the keeper. But, yeah, it's generally seen as a strangle, isn't it? Yeah. If you get out caught down the leg side, really.
Yeah, it was unlucky. And he'd actually picked up a boundary, glancing one for four a few minutes earlier. So that is one of his shots. You know, people have said when Dom Sibley was out a few times, caught down the leg side or, you know, caught kind of flicking it to leg gully or whatever, you know, that it's a weakness. I mean, maybe in Sibley's case it is. I don't think it is with Hamid. I think that is a legitimate shot. The bounce of the Gabba does cause those types of dismissals, though, because it can just brush the glove as you're looking to work it, you know, off your pad or off your hip, and you get that little bit of extra bounce and pace, and it just brushes the glove. I do think it's a legitimate wicket, actually. I mean, it doesn't look as if the bowler's bowled for it, but sometimes, I mean, it depends. If the batsman's gloves and bat are miles away from his body, then yes, it's lucky. But if it's a regulation ball on a bat leg stump with a bit of extra bounce and it does glance off the glove, I think that is a legitimate dismissal, actually.
Yeah, especially in somewhere like the Gabba or the Wanderers where there is that extra bounce. You know, you feel you do bring both sides of the wicket into play. Anyway, the point is, Hamid was out 61 for two. And if you think about it, from the start of the game to that point, it's just been an upward trajectory for Australia, inexorably. You know, they've just dominated the game. They controlled the game throughout. It was 61 for two, and then came the fight back.
Well, after England's excellent fight back on the third day, there's every incentive to stay up tonight and follow the action. Not easy to do, of course. Preparation is the key. And in this sense, a great solution is Mission Teas. Mission have created a new range of 100% natural performance teas to provide something we all need more of, sustainable energy. They've become a favourite with professional athletes, including some of the England team. Maybe Joe Root drank the Energised blend at the tea interval today. I've certainly noticed the difference in my energy levels after drinking some of that. Anyway, whether you're following the Ashes Down Under or not, we think you'll love what Mission offers, so we partnered with them to give you, the listeners, 20% off your next order. All you need to do is head to missionuk.com, discover the teas you need to fuel your day using Mission's handy quiz, whether you're looking for better energy, enhanced performance or boosted recovery, and enter the code CRICKET20, all one word, at checkout. That's cricket20 at missionuk.com. Come on, England. So let's have a look at how England fought back. And I think Australia made an initial decision where data overtook common sense. Because Joe Root came in, they know that Josh Hazlewood's taken his wicket eight times, and that, in fact, Pat Cummins has taken it seven. But Mitchell Starc had just taken a wicket and he was bowling with a lot of heat and he was getting the ball to lift a little bit. But they took him off and put Hazlewood on. And I thought Hazlewood looked a little bit undercooked, actually, or a little bit tired. And Root was able to just get into his innings. How did you see it?
Well, I mean, these days, matchups is a big thing, isn't it? And you're absolutely right. It was eight dismissals for Hazelwood, seven for Cummins, and they both came on to bowl. As soon as Root came in, and you know, is that captaincy sort of manual A, point number one? I don't know. I mean, but you know, Hazelwood got him out in the first innings. They've got all those memories of Hazelwood getting him out, and Cummins has done it as well. You know, you can see the logic. Root was on naught. You know, he was on a pair as well as Burns. It didn't work. Root played magnificently, and you know, anyone who's seen Root play this year, again, whether it's against India or Sri Lanka, it was that sort of high class technical batting. You know, he looked assured. He didn't look in any trouble at all. You know, got off the mark, and then he hit a nice boundary through the onside. He was sort of away, and there was a sort of positivity to his batting that just must have lifted the confidence of Milan at the other end as well, and must have lifted the confidence of the dressing room. So yeah, I can understand why Cummins made that captaincy decision. But yeah, you're right. I mean, sometimes you take a bowler off who's just taken a wicket, they might feel a little bit miffed. But your point about Hazelwood is an interesting one, because he only bowled eight overs. Yeah. So, you know, I wonder what the situation is, you know, with Josh Hazelwood, whether they're just holding him back. You know, they do have lots of options. Of course they do. I mean, even Labuschagne bowled a few overs. And actually, you could argue that Labuschagne got closest to a wicket because he bowled one to Milan. There was an appeal for LBW, and actually it was umpire's call, just flicking the top of leg stump. It was given not out, just shaving leg stump. But, of course, if it had been given out on the field, then he would have stayed out. So, you know, that was probably the closest Australia got to a wicket. Although there was one other incident, Yoz, a strange one, and the technology in this game is odd because we talked about the no balls early in the match that weren't called by the technology, and the standing umpire, you know, the onus was on him to call them, and they didn't call Stokes' no balls. They eventually took a wicket off a no ball. There was one where Milan edged, or well, that's what Australia thought. They appealed for an edge when Milan had 16, and those behind the wicket were absolutely convinced there was an edge, and they reviewed it. But we don't have all the technology in this match. There's a sort of problem with it. Some of it is down, so we just go with what we've got available in this game, which is obviously the DRS, the predictions for the LBWs, and just hotspot. That's the only one we've got. So we've got no Snicko. And you know, I wonder whether Snicko would have shown something different, but there was nothing on hotspot. It was an odd one as well, because the first time you saw it, it seemed to go past the sort of outside edge of the bat. And then when they showed the hotspot from side on, they had the ball sort of going sort of underneath, sort of by the toe of the bat. Anyway, I don't know, optical illusion, whatever. But there was nothing obvious. There were some few white marks around the bat, but you know, the umpire said that was sort of flaring. Mm-hmm. So you know, the bat sort of tapping on the ground, you know, before you take strike. And so if it was anything, it was just that, from where he tapped it on the ground, and it left a white mark. There wasn't, you know, nothing there at all. So Australia lost their review, but there isn't, you know, but they knew there isn't a great deal of technology. So you know, you do chance it when you try to overturn the umpire's decision in that case. But you know, it does feel weird that we've got the Ashes, and you know, it's the ultimate of the game, and we don't have all the technology that we're used to.
It's another little incident that's probably partly due to COVID, but also because they haven't been able to draft in, you know, new technology and you know, new people to sort it out. But also, actually, it's funny, but Australia is the one country which doesn't use Hawkeye. This is a big up to Hawkeye, really, who also pretty much dominate DRS systems around the world. But in Australia, they use something called Virtual Spectator. And whether that is the cause of this malfunction, I don't know, but it could be. And also, hotspot is just not... I've never thought hotspot was up to much, really. I thought it was always a bit flawed. And the number of times you play in a hot country and the heat off the surface, off the land, kind of corrupts the hotspot camera sensibilities and you don't get the right reading. So I think hotspot's pretty, but you can't rely on it very much, and this has been proved in this case, really.
Yeah, well, the one that we've sort of come to rely on is that sort of that Snicko, whatever you want to call it, that Snicko thing where you see the spike. And well, that isn't available in this game because I think the issue is that they can't either bring more technology in to replace the technology that's sort of broken down, or they can't get the personnel in to fix it because of the, you know, border restrictions. Queensland's only opening up the day after the scheduled final day of the match. You know, it's opening its borders. It's been sort of closed down. You have to quarantine for 14 days. So that's the reason there's a problem with the technology. We just don't know whether it benefited Milan or not. There didn't look to be any you know, evidence of a nick, but Australia thought there was. The umpire said not out, so you know it was given not out on the field, so you went with that, and that's sort of part of the game, I suppose. That's how it always used to be, didn't it? The umpire said not out, it was not out. The umpire said it was out, it was out.
And but, technology in this game has been a bit suspect, hasn't it, with the no ball system not working
either. It's the same thing. It's all part of the same thing. And you could argue that benefited Australia earlier in the match with the Warner one. You know, it may be that Stokes, if he'd been called for no ball early in the over, he would have just had his foot behind the line for the Warner one. But then, you know, the whole point of keeping your foot behind the line is you're not quite as, fractionally not quite as close to the batter, isn't it, as well? So whether you'd have bowled the same ball, same length, I don't know. You know, there were lots of variables, and there are also some very fine margins in the game as well. So England at the close, they did have a slightly dodgy last half an hour. Milan got a bit of cramp, was swishing a bit outside the off stump. I think he was very relieved to get through to the close of play. You know, he said he was really tired, 2 days in, he said 2 days in the dirt, fielding, hard work. It wasn't 2 days in the dirt, really, although he'd been on the field, I suppose, for close on 2 days, because actually England were only in the field for 104.3 overs, which isn't that much in Test cricket terms. But when you haven't played much cricket in the middle and it's hot, it feels like a long time. And of course, there were a lot of runs scored by Australia, 425. They scored at a good rate. So England got through to the close. So where is this test match going then, Yoz? I think it might be time to look at our predictions. There are two days left. England are 58 runs behind. They've got 8 wickets in hand. The new ball is 10 overs away. Joe Root is, in theory, closing in on his first test match 100 in Australia. He's 86 and out. Milan is there on 80. He's already got an Ashes 100 in Australia. What's your feeling about where this game is going before you give me your predicting score for the close of play tomorrow?
Well, there's still something in that pitch, and in fact there's probably more than there was yesterday anyway. There was plenty on the first day, not so much yesterday, and then it's just starting to look a little bit uneven now, the odd ball doing something, misbehaving. So that new ball for Australia is going to be absolutely key. When they take it, England have to make sure they don't lose a wicket in the first 10 overs or 11 overs of play, so that Root and Milan are still in situ. And then they're in a much better position to weather that difficult sort of 15 overs with the second new ball. If England lose a wicket or two in that first 10 or 11 overs, then it's going to be a very different scenario. So that kind of first 20 overs, the 10 overs before the second new ball and the 10 overs after it, I think will be the key to the rest of the match. If England can get through those 20 overs unscathed, then you can see them building up, a really substantial score, maybe getting to 400 and setting Australia 130, 140, 150 to win, which you'd still expect them to get, but it will challenge them a bit. If they lose wickets in those first 20 overs, then I think it could end tomorrow.
Okay, then. Right, so what's your... You got to go first tonight. Okay. I went first last night. What is your close of play on the fourth day score prediction? What's it going to be?
I'm going to say England 357 all out, so adding another 140 or something, and Australia requiring 70 or 80 to win, get there for 3 down. So end of the match with Australia winning by 7 wickets.
So you're having Australia winning tomorrow by 7 wickets. Okay, my close of play score tomorrow is Australia 30 for no wicket. That's all I'm required to do. I'm not going to tell you how many they're going to be chasing, but I think they're going to be around about 30 for no wicket at the close of play tomorrow.
So you reckon England are going to get over 400, basically?
I think they might get a few. Yeah, I think they might get a few, but I'm not that optimistic. They'll get enough. They fought hard today, and you're right. I mean, so much depends on that bit before the new ball on the fourth day, and then that sort of 10, 15 overs after the new ball. So, we'll see. I mean, it's really worth staying up tonight to watch, listen, and follow the first session. It's Friday night. We're getting close to Christmas. It's one of those... I mean, I hope it's not an anticlimax. You know, you get 2 wickets for the new ball and 2 wickets with the new ball, and suddenly it's, 6 down, and it's pretty much game over. What we hope is for a real contest on the fourth and possibly the fifth days of the match. You know, but I mean, England have made it a contest today. I think at least they've sort of regained a bit of pride. I think there's a feeling out here, the Poms have come over, they're collapsing again, they're useless, But Root and Milan changed it round from 61 for two. They sort of remember we did those sort of who's winning predicting things in the summer, Jos? And well, I think for that, the game, the line has just been going up and up and up and up and up for Australia. Well, England just sort of put a sort of wedge on that and made it sort of forced it to go down a little bit on this third day. So at least they can take something from that.
Yeah, it's just a morale boosting situation, isn't it? I mean, you don't want to be completely rolled over in that first test. You want to show a bit of fight and work out a few methods of playing and dealing with these scenarios and showing that you're made of a bit of substance. And that's what England have done today.
Yeah. Okay, so that's our roundup after 3 days of this first Ashes Test match. The game is still alive, and I think there were some who thought that wouldn't be the case after 3 days. But it's going into a fourth day, and it's there certainly is some intrigue left in this game. We'll be back tomorrow with another roundup. We'll find out how close our predictions are to being correct. We've been a little bit off the mark so far, but we'll find out on that final day. Hope you've enjoyed our roundup. We'll be back with more tomorrow. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.